Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we interview founders of companies who have bought companies, sold companies, raised money, and have developed new and innovative products or services to create massive value for the marketplace. My name is Nathan Burt, and I will be your host today. Our special guest today is Brendan Borrowman, CEO and founder of Axios VR, a company creating innovative VR gaming development firm, seamlessly merging the excitement of lifelike environments, captivating challenges in live biofeedback with a revolutionary integration of neurotechnology. That's a mouthful, but I'm sure we'll get into it today. We're thrilled to have you on the podcast, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man.
You know, I'm excited to get into a little bit of the past, present, and future of what you're all about. But, you know, the first question I love to ask people, and this opens up so many different answers, but it is, what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Ooh, freedom. Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom.
If you're not busy building your dreams, you're building somebody else's. That freedom for me is kind of everything. After being in the military, I do not fit in a mold to work in somebody else's organization. It just doesn't exist in my creative mind.
I agree with you on that. I mean, we're all searching for freedom in some way, shape, or form, and what I've seen and what I've seen here too, as far as interviewing so many founders. Now you're actually at the 50th episode.
Ooh, big 50.
Yeah, just 5.
I'm honored. Thank you, man.
Well, I mean, I'm just as excited. But we've seen and heard that many people are searching for that freedom, and entrepreneurship is literally one of the best ways to do that. Of course, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with the freedom that we're seeking, right? But you know, I want to know a little bit about your past. Share with me about, you know, you're in elementary. How about that? You know,
elementary.
You're just getting started in life. And what are the big inspirations in your life, and what propels you forward?
So I come from a very broken home. Okay. So my mom left when I was 7, took my little brother with her. So I got split from my mom and my brother, lived with my father, who had his own challenges, and lived a life of extremes. I was a latchkey kid. I had no oversight when I did. I kind of ruled myself from about the age of 8. My father has a lot of amazing traits. I don't want to, you know, shit too much on the man. But he had some demons.
Yes.
And that led me to be very
sufficient.
Not just sufficient, but self-dependent. I did not have the childhood where, you know, you can depend on mom and dad to take care of you. It was always on me. And the results of that failure, of that burden on yourself, like if I didn't get up and go to school, it was my fault. I didn't have somebody to wake me up. You know, if I wanted clean clothes, not to stink, I had to wash my own clothes. If I wanted nice school clothes, I had to work during the summer. I started my first entrepreneur business kind of scam in my neighborhood at 10. We had a fundraiser for a football team I was on. And I was like, damn, people are willing to pay $20 for me to go wash their cars to get football gear. I bet if I kept this flyer, I could do it all summer. And that summer, I went and knocked doors and sold car washes, and I convinced my friends to go wash the cars for $10. So I made $10 a door doing nothing but just selling. And that was like my intro into sales. And, you know, I did that for that whole summer and made some really good money. And then the school found out and, you know, called my dad. And they're like, he's lying about a fundraiser. And then I realized that was wrong. But it showed me that scalability at that time, I didn't understand scalability, but it showed me that scalability was really the only thing I could rely upon, because I saw successful people and I saw people like my dad working in normal America.
Yes.
And I saw what they had. And then I saw from my own experience what that could look like for me. And, you know, it took me down a different path. I got into selling drugs and being a horrible kid. But then I joined the military at 17. It changed my life because it gave the kid with the drive and ambition a new trajectory, and then a social system to rely upon. It gave me father figures. It gave me brothers. It gave me that environment I never had, and kind of focused me more into the path that I found myself on today.
Let's talk more about brotherhood. Let's talk about accountability and what obviously what the military gave you, but also the friendships, the lifelong friendships and brotherhood that you were able to experience, and how creating businesses, for those of you out there that have them, how you can create a culture that is inviting. So share with us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I joined the Army at 17, day one of 17. I was an angry kid. I wanted to, you know, hurt people. I was scared and wanted to hurt people because I was tired of being hurt. And I thought the job that I picked would allow that. I thought that, like, oh, the recruiter got me. Like, if we go to war with Russia, you got a 3-minute life expectancy. And I was like, I am in. I joined as a scout. So I joined as a Cav Scout sniper. I wasn't a sniper at the time. I was just a scout. But I learned really quick during the OSIP process, they want thinkers, because our unit's one of the only units to operate in micro groups on a real scout deployment, real mission. Like I had in Afghanistan, we worked in 4-man OPs, observation posts. You have 3 other dudes you can depend on but yourself. Everybody has to be a thinker. No one there can just be a trigger puller. No one there can just be a door kicker. Everyone has to be able to do every job. And so that was my culture. I immediately got immersed in was self-reliance, but accountability was, you got to know everything or you're not going to make it here. And never having a strong father figure, never having that brotherhood connection, I immediately gravitated towards that culture of dependency on the people around me, right? The trust but verify. Like, these guys I know because I'm going through the same shit with them. Mm-hmm. They have my back, I have their back. And if we die, it's because it's meant to be, not because somebody messed up. And that culture propelled me through my deployment. It got me through the 2.5 years I spent in hospital. I was wounded in combat in 2011. And that culture that you don't see in corporate America of, like, being there for each other, that you have in the military, especially the combat arms side of the military operations, got me through the darkest moments of my life. But unfortunately, it didn't get a lot of my friends through it. You know, a lot of my friends got out and lost the fight to mental health and committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And one of my horrible jokes, it's I have dark humor. I'm sorry to all the listeners, but, you know, the only other person I know that has as many friends that have killed themselves as me is Hillary Clinton, right? Like,
that's funny.
It's a horrible joke, but it's true. I mean, it's a burden to bear, but that it gives you responsibility too. And that responsibility has carried me through every company organization I've set up. This is my 5th one.
Yeah.
And you've been around my team. I mean, it's very obvious that culture from the military carries over into my company through and through. I mean, the operator culture is there.
Mm-hmm. Share with us a little bit more about, you know, the accountability part, but also those that are part of the environment and what ego needs to be kicked out the door, you know? And I think that's really important for every organization, because, you know, sports psychology or just overall, you know, storming, norming, and performing are those 3 components. Can you share a little bit more of maybe what you had gone through in the military, but also from a business sense, right? Because I'm seeing a lot of correlations.
Yeah, yeah. I think the first thing, and this is for your veteran listeners, there's something that happens if you've stayed in the military long enough, if you're enlisted, to graduate from lower enlisted E4 to E5, that NCO leadership perspective change of, you know, when I got my stripes, I was told by chain of command, like, you can't hang out with your friends that are specialists anymore. Your friends that are privates, you can't have that really. You got to graduate to that next level of relationships and responsibility. That's that accountability piece. Like, hey, I've leveled up to my next level. There's still especially in combat arms, that I'm the end all be all in my chosen profession. Doesn't serve you in business. Mm-hmm. You can't be the smartest guy in the room. If you're the smartest guy in your room, you're in the wrong room. Your business is going to fail. You won't scale. It might be awesome for a short term, but it's going to fall apart. And I learned that lesson the hard way when I first got out, my first business. I had that operator, like, I know everything. I'm learning everything. I'm the expert. And my whole thing fell apart.
Okay.
But the veteran has the ability to adapt. And that's why I tell everybody, like, hire veterans. They might have that issue coming out, but if there's mentorship around them, like, I got very blessed with good, solid entrepreneur mentors very early in my, you know, journey through this process. You adapt quick, you absorb the information quick, and you move forward. It's ingrained in you in the military to be able to adapt to new information and change your mindset really on a turn that I don't think a lot of people in the world have. It's kind of a key nature that's bred into you during that process of training. And so when it comes to that phase, that's where veterans are strong and succeed, very open to accountability because it's what they're used to, the environment they come from. But the ego piece, once you can help someone hone that in and kind of eliminate the toxicity of it, they become an amazing weapon to start their own firm or company or be a successful team member helping you build yours.
So what's been the biggest driver of you now being creative and really understanding yourself a little deeper? I think that's important as well as we can dive into that, because, you know, you found yourself elementary, high school, being a little hoodlum, and then now you're like, you know, I need some structure. I'm going to join the military. Obviously, that probably wasn't the first thought, but, you know, hey, we're gonna do something here. You learn from there, and now you're starting businesses.
Yep.
So take us through that process of when you first began, and then maybe some of the things that you learned along the way.
So my first business, so I medically retired. I left the hospital. I was on 43 different types of medication. I weighed 340 pounds, winded going up a flight of stairs. Okay. My life, as I knew, as an identity piece was over. I didn't recognize the person in the mirror. I felt like my career, once I fell in love with the military, that wasn't going to be my career. I was going to be a 20 to 25 year guy. I felt like everything was ripped from me. Well, I was also a first time father. I had two babies that I didn't know how to be a dad to, because I didn't have the example of what a father was. I just had the example of what not to be. And I couldn't get a job at McDonald's. I got out, applied at McDonald's. I was too qualified. I applied somewhere else. I was underqualified. I couldn't find where I could fit in. There's not a lot of jobs for snipers out there. Active shooters weren't hiring, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't know what to do. I was at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I was on Craigslist, desperate, and Stonemakers had an ad out for Purple Heart veterans, veterans that were wounded in combat. I didn't know who Stonemakers was. I didn't know the company, didn't know anything about them. But the ad was really simple. It's like, do you have a Purple Heart? We want you, was the title. And I was like, let's see what this is about. Then it was really cryptic. It said, write us an essay on why you deserve a company. And I was like, that's weird. I 3 o'clock morning, wasn't sleeping. You can blame the Ambien, whatever it was. God, I wrote like 12-page manifesto of why I needed a company. And the next day they called me and they're like, hey, we'll fly out to New Hampshire and teach you how to do this. We'll give you your own franchise. Are you interested? I thought either I'd lose my kidneys or I'd get an opportunity. And either or at that point in time, my life were fine. Jumped on a flight to New Hampshire, and David Montoya from Stonemakers, it's who owns it. He's an amazing mentor of mine from sales perspective, was a stand-up comedian. But he runs a construction company that takes guys with no art background, no creative background, with veterans, and he has a process that helps stoke the creative fire in you, but gives you a process to succeed in having your own sales company and doing manual labor on your own. So I did that. It's hardscape and design work. Learned everything I could from him. I absorbed all the sales knowledge I could. Changed my life. David and his team changed my life. They stoked the entrepreneur fire in me of like, this is what I want to do. I want to work for myself, no one else. The hours are longer, the work's harder. It's a lot more stressful, but the benefit when you're done is 10 times greater. There's such an immense sense of just self-success whenever you've hit a big, I'm sure all your listeners that own their own company, even your first contract, if you've made, you know, a couple $100, that feeling, that's a high you can't get anywhere else. And I got addicted to that high. I was on it. I did that for a year and a half. And then, like all young, dumb entrepreneurs, I overextended myself and made bad mistakes and found myself losing that company. But the best advice David ever gave me on that phone, I called him and told him, you know, I failed. I was failing. And he goes, what's next? How are you? Like, what can I do for you? Let me coddle you. It was very clear, what's next? He wanted to know what my next step was. What was I going to go into?
Yeah.
And that's been my mindset moving to every project I've done is, okay, we need to make a lateral change. What's next? Something bad's happened. Great. What's next? What's our next path forward? What's our next audible? What's our next door we can go through? And I've taken that lesson into everything I've done.
So lessons, let's go into the lessons of, you know, maybe one or two of the things that you or the moves that you made that didn't allow for that success within that company. You know what it was?
Yeah, so I overextended on capability of project scope. Had some good success doing some smaller projects and thought the scaling of that would be easier than it was.
Okay.
So think of from a manufacturing standpoint, I was doing concept work and doing great concept work, but I never knew how to take it into a larger scale. I took a job that was too big. My crew wasn't large enough to fulfill it, thinking that I could just scale like I did before and bring on more guys and train those guys, but in the same time frame. And it just super overextended on budget. under expected the expense to scale. I mean, it just, everything fell apart because I was so used to the smaller concept work versus at scale, how do we build this highway? You know, like that, it wasn't the job, but that it equates to that. I was building back roads and then went and got a contract to build an interstate with no experience in building bridges or four lane traffic or, you know, overpasses. Like it, I just completely.
So that's a natural thing though, as entrepreneurs, yeah. Right? We're like, you know, if we're not feeling challenged, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I mean,
seek that challenge.
That's a goal too, right? Is a contract that large is like when you start out, it's like, oh, I'm getting these, I'm surviving. You're not thriving yet. You're still in survival mode. And then that opportunity comes across like this is life changing. And you get lost in that kind of like, what could this do for me versus, mm-hmm.
versus
can I do it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's good.
I learned that lesson, thank God, early. I learned it at 21. Mm. And you learn a lot of expensive mistakes starting out. I don't know one entrepreneur that their first project was the one that worked, right? Most of the guys I know, I'm sure you share the same experience. Yeah. The first few projects you make, you pay for your mistakes. You learn what you're doing wrong.
Yes.
Or you're learning from your mentors, from them doing wrong. And you're able to apply that to your next project and learn some new things and apply it to the next project. And that's what I've been doing for 13 years now.
So good.
Learn, you know?
So you said next project, and I'm pretty excited to talk a little bit about, you know, the next project that you're working on. But share with us a little bit about why you're doing that project and as well, you know, some of the current circumstances that you are facing right now, but also how that's propelling you to become the best person you can possibly, leave a legacy and an impact, and build something of longevity.
So to start, I had that construction business, exited that, had a body back that I was kind of proud of that I could run with, right? And decided to get back into contracting. I felt like I'll go back to what I'm good at. And while I was on a contract, I lost my 60th friend to suicide. 60th.
Wow.
Being in the military hospital system for 2.5 years, I had the privilege to meet thousands of veterans that were wounded, whether it be combat or mental or just the body strain from day-to-day operations in the military. But with that population, you meet a lot of at-risk individuals. And our current system of treating them just doesn't work. If they're in that mind space, you're 4 or 5 months out from therapy on the VA. It was failing them. And when I lost him, I had this moment of just anger at the world. Why can we succeed in doing the hard things like taking lives, but we can't succeed in helping someone get put back together? And I figured I gotta figure this out. I started a nonprofit called the You Are Not Alone Mission. We were just a peer-to-peer outreach, veteran to veteran. It scaled so fast, I was spending 20 hours a day on it. Couldn't handle it. We exited that to a larger nonprofit who took it over. And then I went from that into I was doing solar at the time. I left contracting, I was doing solar sales. And my business partner's son failed his third rehab. And so I went, let me figure out what's going over here. Give me your son. And started seeing a lot of the same issues in drug addiction that I was seeing in PTSD. A lot of veterans with PTSD were having substance abuse issues. And so instead of looking at behavior, because that's what everybody's looking at, wanted to go the neurological route. Found my partner 7 years ago at Cognitive FX. And since working with them, we identified the blood flow issue of that manifests physically with PTSD, depression, drug addiction, and then how to restore that in a clinic setting. And that process brought me to the first issue I had in my first company was scalability. How do I scale this? So we decided to look at VR as our next platform. That's what we're doing at Axios right now. We've created a patented engine that takes real-time biofeedback data from the individual on top of a process that's already been developed to restore blood flow. So it's not a cookie-cutter approach. It's very machine-based to the individual. So the machine AI is learning with the individual as they're playing and changing the model for the player while it being a multiplayer platform video game.
Take us through that scenario. You know, I'm that person. I have some thoughts, or you know, I want to actually use your product. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through that as an avatar?
Yeah. So, you know? Think of the game as a skin,
okay.
Right? So we have our first commercial game coming out. It's a shooter. We're targeting the veteran community. you're a consumer, you go to our website and you buy a package. If you have VR, you're buying the game, right? If you don't have VR, you're buying a package with a VR headset. You log in, you give it permission to connect to your Whoop or Apple Watch, whatever feedback device you currently have. If you don't have one, you don't need one. The game's built to restore blood flow, but you're missing out on all the other data changes the game can make to help increase sleep, to help increase heart rate variability, to decrease stress. The game live with those plugins will change and morph to the player, but even without it, you're storing blood flow just from the game mechanics, playing the video game the way we've built it. The task built in to change blood flow in the brain is you have to put the brain under a certain amount of stress physically with your body for X amount of time. And so we've gamified those mechanics and hidden them within the game itself. So as you play this multiplayer game, competitive shooter with your friends, you're helping your brain recover and heal. That's how a user would approach it. My influence for this, it was really a conversation I had with a couple friends of medical trainings or help out there is not fun. There's always a barrier to it. So I like the study that Duke did on state of play and how much it increased when, you know, a therapist worked with an adolescent and they were, instead of coloring, they were playing tag or hide and seek. The barriers drop faster. And I figured if we can do that in VR, we can do it much faster. We can scale it because now your impact on player is, you know, from one patient to the next. You don't have to clear your office or have someone in a waiting room. You just jump into another virtual room. And so that's kind of the idea behind it. It's why we created it the way we did. But really, the state of play is what changed the game for us when it came from the studies for the neurological impact. I had the same amount of results in 4 hours over 4 days. So an hour a day for 4 days straight. Then I had doing a 9 hour a day in clinic for 2 weeks with 55 medical staff. Our results were better. And so that's, we're 100% in it now. I mean, we're
all in.
Yeah. The goal is in 2 years to transition from the clinic strictly to virtual.
Okay. Share with us a little bit about the team and how you're able to recruit the right people inside of the culture. So let's talk about culture and then also the team and then how you're setting up systems that'll long outlast you.
So let's start with the long outlast me and address that elephant in the room. I have terminal cancer. So I was diagnosed with terminal cancer 2 years ago. Had multiple surgeries so far. And so I, from a culture standpoint, I don't want to buy into the thing of like legacy. Legacy is not a real thing, the scale most people think it is. I don't know who the 16th president of America was. I don't either. He was the president of the United States, right? Do you know the fourth king of England? No, me either. He was a king. Like, that legacy, no matter how big it is, doesn't have impact down the road. My legacy thing is for my children and maybe my children's grandkids. Maybe if I'm lucky, they'll know about me. And then the legacy of who I'm touching and impacting today in today's world, not 100 years from now, not after I'm dead. What's my legacy of making impact society-wise while I'm here today? If I can save someone's life, goes cures cancer, it's a big legacy piece my family will know about. It doesn't matter if no one else does. And that mindset shaped the culture for Axios. Okay, let's put people before profits. How do we scale this so it's affordable and it's not a medication device that charges $30,000 to an individual? So we're using headsets that already exist, like the Meta headset, the Vive, most Android headsets. So that way we're just providing a software component. Any hardware can work and we can resell the hardware if people don't have the hardware. But we can make it affordable, make it scalable, make an impact immediately. And I wanted to find partners that believed in that component over the profit component. And I found the right people for the right spots. Our chief medical officer is a NASA doc, right? We know him from the guy brought on to be our CEO, Craig Cooper, special ops fire chief, was responsible for the response for the shooting in Vegas. Just retired. His impact is for his firefighters that he served with that are committing suicide en masse. How do we help them? His partners at Blue Note that we brought on, same thing, mental health impact. The coder team I brought on, you know, PsyOps, Army veteran himself, you've met him, Brian. And he's struggling from PTSD himself. It's a personal story for him because he's struggled through what he did in the military and how that affected him and his life now with kids and his wife. And the mission of this and the actual impact it has is what brought everybody to the table. Like, we want to be a part of this.
That's good. I think everyone should have a deeper mission as opposed to what you were just saying. There's purpose and profits. Where does that mission come in? Mm-hmm. And how often do you share that Because I know you as someone who's now, you're, you know, the founder of the company, the visionary, every day you're sharing mission.
Yeah.
What are we doing? How are we solving the, in how are we stepping into the, our better selves and into the future here? And I'm curious to know tactically how you were able to position as well as remove yourself and then place in the CEO or someone else, you know? Because I think many people out there, you might find yourself in a position where it's like, wow, I've created the entirety of my organization. But now I need to replace myself. Like, yes. How do I do that?
So I come from, you know, military operations community, set that in me. You know the job, one below you and two up. So if you're in combat, someone, you know, the NCO mm-hmm. dies, somebody else can step up and take that spot. And that philosophy has followed me through life. And setting up this company, I knew very quickly trying to raise money, I would be the weakest link. Who's going to invest in the founder that has terminal cancer, right? The process was in my head. It was live or die with me. But once I brought on my team and I shared all that, there was no longer the issue of, okay, if I die, this is now gone. But it's still the, do you want a CEO that could be gone at any moment? So I stepped out and brought in a CEO, brought in somebody that shared the mission over experience and had the capability to ramp up fast. And Coop's done that amazingly. And he'll continue to succeed. But as a founder, I think you have to find your place in this position where it either makes or breaks a startup. Either you trust and you kind of go hands off and you don't micromanage and you trust the people you've brought on into their spots, or you don't. You can't be half in. It's mm-hmm. either or. Either you do not trust the team you brought on and then you have to self-reflect on why that is, make some adjustments, or you trust it and you step out and you see what happens. And my team has performed amazingly. I mean, I stepped out really when we started. Really, you got the whole look, I think, at the Warrior Rising event of what Axios is. And that was our first kind of week of me stepping back. Just, hey, Brendan, you're founder. Go out, do podcasts, go out, do interviews.
Perfect.
We'll give you weekly updates, but you let us do our things. And since then, we've left that. We've raised $5 million on our 20 cap. We have got a contract with two more universities. We're working on our roadmap right now with NASA. We're working on 100 different things that I don't think would have been able to happen if I was micromanaging everything. Because you only have so many hours in the day.
Yes.
You can only do so much. And as a founder, that's the first thing you have to realize is you're not responsible to do it all. As a visionary, yeah, you created this thing, but it's like having kids. Your kids will hit a certain age where you have no more influence on what they do. Mm-hmm. And you got to step back and hope you did the right things when you could. You raised them the right way. And it's the same thing with your business. Hopefully you've brought the right people in, you've established the right culture, that when you step back, everything runs itself the same way.
Yeah, that's so good. It's so good for everyone out there. Systems, you know, putting the right people in the right place, establishing a culture of excellence, continuing to share your mission over and over and over again, and you ultimately find success. So how can our community rally behind your mission?
So axiosvr.com is our website. Sign up on the subscriber list. We will be doing a commercial Kickstarter beginning quarter one of next year. That'll have a lot of information on how, if you're a parent out there and you want something to help your kids be able to function well but play a video game, or if you're a veteran struggling, you want to play a video game that might help you, or if you're just a normal person out there that they're like, maybe you're struggling and a video game sounds like a cool option to check out, sign up on that. We'll push the Kickstarter, and then we're also partnering with a couple of telehealth companies right now that we'll push out information to. If you're looking for a therapist for therapy, we're rolling out a VR therapy program in a room that the data, I can't share too much on it, but mm-hmm. the data is amazing. I mean, it will change the telehealth game for mental health. And if you're a mental health provider and you're interested in maybe partnering with us, reach out on there, reach out on our social medias. The handle on social on Instagram is AxiosVR. AXIOSVR. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing for our website. So that's the rally around us on that. If you can't purchase, share. If you can't share, like, engagement's king right now on the social networks. So yeah, just I think that's the best way you could support us, as we support our mission and helping everybody else.
Let's do it, guys. So thank you so much for listening to the Founders Odyssey podcast today. If you guys liked today's episode, feel free to subscribe as well as share it with your friends. And in particular, this one, share it with your veteran friends who are very, you know, curious about this, maybe in an area where maybe they're mentally not just, you know, unstable, but, you know, they're looking to grow. You know, we want growth-minded individuals who are going to jump on this. So once again, thank you so much for joining us today. Pleasure getting to know you. And guys, subscribe. We'll talk to you later.